Welcome back to The BOMA. This episode is dedicated to International Women's Day 2023. And this year's theme is Digital, Digital Innovation and Technology for Gender Equality. So, how is digital innovation supposed to help women livestock farmers in lower to middle income countries? And what are the specific struggles women in those countries face? Well, let's start by focusing in on the Upper East region of Ghana, close to the Sahara. There's no rainfall here for nearly 7 months a year, and farmers depend on their livestock for income and nutrition. Now, traditionally, sheep and cattle are considered men's livestock, while women manage goats and chickens. Diseases are a problem for all livestock farmers, but they can affect women's livestock particularly badly. An outbreak of Newcastle disease in chickens, or Pesti di Petti Ruminants, PPR, in goats, can wipe out a farmer's entire flock or herd. There are effective vaccines for these diseases, but circumstances mean that most women aren't able to use them. In this episode, we'll profile a project that has increased vaccine use by 500% and helped to build more equality for women farmers. First, in areas like these, why aren't women farmers using vaccines? Some of the challenges are social, others technical. ILRI, the NGO Care International, and the social enterprise company Cow Tribe Limited have been working to overcome these challenges through a combination of digital technology and community discussions. Agnes Lariba, manager of the Ghana Project for Care International, explains more about the differences between men and women farmers.
Women are not able to vaccinate due to a number of challenges, which I'll outline. One is even the recognition of a woman as a livestock keeper. So there's this embedded perception that the man is the livestock keeper. And so, for instance, when a veterinary officer comes to the household to run a vaccination exercise, he's looking for the man because the man is considered the farmer who keeps the livestock. And so if the man is not available, the woman may not even have access to information about the fact that there's a vaccination exercise ongoing and be able to have her animals vaccinated. There are also norms around the fact that a woman is not supposed to declare ownership of her livestock. This is considered disrespectful because the man is the head of the household, and the woman is under his control. So whatever asset belongs to the woman equally belongs to the man. And so she cannot exercise that control and decision-making over the livestock. There are also very practical challenges around mobility. A lot of these vet officers, vet service providers are based in the district capital. Women relatively have more limited mobility. If you go to the village, if you count the number of people who have motorbikes, the number of people who have bicycles, the people who are able to move regularly to the district capitals is the men. And so they have greater access to the vet officers, access to information, even about vaccination and benefits of vaccination.
Digital innovation has been used to overcome these challenges. The team have built an app aimed at women farmers, which provides them with information about vaccines, when to use them, and, best of all, they can order vaccines for delivery. What's more, the vaccines are flown in by drones.
This project really demonstrates the ability of technology to cut through some of the barriers that women face. I think this cuts through the barrier around the fact that the woman needs to vaccinate only through her husband or with permission from her husband, or when the husband is interested in having the livestock in the household being vaccinated. Also, With a drone technology, these vaccines get delivered very close to where these women are located. And so it also cuts through the barrier of even mobility for women. So a woman doesn't need to get to a district vet to come and vaccinate her animals. The vaccines are delivered. The women are trained with the skills to be able to do this by themselves. And so it practically brings them close to vaccines and also builds confidence and empowering for women. So just by receiving a message on her phone, she's able to access information about what disease is prevalent at what time and what she needs to do to protect her animals.
So the drones can get vaccines to rural, poorly connected areas fast, which is also crucial for vaccines which would need to be stored at cold temperatures. And the app also lets farmers order the exact quantities of vaccines they need and provides information about how and when to use them. But you can't just introduce digital technology to a community and expect that to be the easy answer. Immaculate Imondi is a gender research economist at ILRI, working within the CGIAR Digital Innovation Initiative. She explains more.
Technologies themselves, it does not work alone. It has to work in tandem with other measures or interventions that bridge these gender restrictions. If we only use the drones on alone, it would not have really worked, because then these women would not be able to interact with male animal health providers. So we needed the women providers to be there, and then we needed the community to the elders to be able to influence to catalyze the relationship between the technology, the animal health providers, and women receiving the vaccinations.
Because handling gender norms is so much more complex than just bringing in technology.
We know that some gender norms are dynamic and they change for different reasons, and they change to something else, or they actually, some of them are actually no longer observed. But so we come in and assess the situation and say, look, what are those gender norms? And then what are the benefits and the restrictions that the impact of these norms? The next step is to say, okay, once we know the norms that we want to work with, how then do we start engaging with the community to let them discuss? So it's a community discussion where you're discussing with them and saying, okay, why are these there, and who does this, and why do they do that? So that we understand, but they also get a perspective around these norms. That is the first step. Because you become aware of these restrictions, because some people are not even aware that these restrictions are really causing some impacts that would have been not desired. The next level is now to engage. After engaging with these communities, then what do you do as an intervention? You could say, okay, this gender norm is more about because people are not informed.
And Immaculate adds that digital tools like social media can also help to inform people.
The process of change, like later, you can use different tools. For instance, social media, you can start giving messages, showcasing role models and saying, hey, here is a successful young woman who is a veterinarian working in a very remote area and actually riding a motorbike. You know, which community might say, oh no, a woman should not ride a motorbike. But here is a woman riding a motorbike. She's young and she is making it. So that starts changing the community's feeling, like, oh yeah, if someone else had their daughter, they would say, oh, I would like my daughter to be like this young lady who we've seen. So slowly they start changing their perception.
Getting community support was a really important part of the project, a part that Care International was deeply involved with.
We also do a lot of work with community leaders. So community leaders here include the chiefs, the women's leaders, the religious leaders, so pastors, imams for communities that we have Muslims. Also involves training male and female gender champions. So with the community leaders, once we have these reflective sessions, the community agrees on an action plan. And so the community leaders support and monitor implementation of these action plans towards addressing the key norm issues. We also have male and female gender champions that are trained in the transformative set of communities. These community gender champions support in mobilizing and facilitating the gender dialogue and social analysis and action sessions in their villages, men in the communities. Both community leaders, the gender champions, also support in addressing any potential backlash that may happen in these communities, because dealing and working with such norms that have been inbuilt in these communities for a very long time may come with some resistance. So having a structure at the community that enables community members to manage any potential backlash is important.
So having done this, how was the vaccine delivery project received?
So the response has been very positive. Vaccine uptake has increased, over 500%. There's also a lot of interest that has been generated both by female farmers and the men.
They've also seen a drop in the cost of vaccines because the cost of transport has fallen. The digital divide, the gap between skills and access for women compared to men, is one of the concepts behind this year's International Women's Day theme.
I think this is something that is now becoming very common knowledge, that digital technologies can actually improve productivity, it can improve profitability, and it can also be used to manage food risks around food and land and water systems. So this is very important to farmers, because then they are able to achieve what they would want to achieve. Looking at especially areas around the Global South, we find that the digital digitization, much as it has potential benefits, it's not equally distributed in some cases, and that could be, as I mentioned earlier, rural versus urban, where you find that people who are living in rural areas have maybe lower access to these digital technologies based on the infrastructures and also based on the income levels compared to urban people.
And as for how bad the digital divide is, well, in lower and middle income countries, women are 16% less likely to use mobile internet and 7% less likely to even own a phone. That's around 372 million women who don't have mobile phones.
On gender, we have women on the other end who might be constrained in different ways, including social and gender norms that restrict them into participating in these digital technologies. For instance, you take a case of a woman who is living in the farm, and she has the roles and the duties of a typical woman in the rural area: clean the dishes, fetch water, fetch firewood. Another thing that is also the education divide, where you find that in some communities, some societies still value a boy child education compared to a girl child education. So the literacy levels of women tend to be lower than compared to men, and that also affects their adoption of digital technologies. And this in all brings in the issue of digital divide that we really would like to be able to bridge.
The 2022 UN Women's Gender Snapshot report says that excluding women from the digital world without taking action, this loss will grow to $1.5 trillion by 2025. But as this year's International Women's Day wants to highlight, the digital divide is not impassable.
When you're talking of specific technologies, then you need to go to the ground and measure and say, okay, we have this set of technologies that apply in this area, but who are the users? Who are the providers? What is the difference between them? Who provides what and where? And that gives us first-hand information in terms of what exists and what does not exist, and the capacities, the skills, the knowledge of the people, and even the tools that they are using. Do they have access to mobile phones? Do they have access to internet, for instance? So we use that, and as researchers, we are keen to really getting empirical information. So we use surveys to go down and drill down the data and get some evidence on this digital divide.
And the success of the vaccine project in Ghana shows that it's possible to help communities change their conventions around gender, and that in doing so, they can improve the lives of women and their livestock, which in turn benefits whole families and communities. Gender research across the different CGIAR centres is highlighted by the Gender Impact Platform. The platform, which is headquartered here at ILRI, is led by Nicolene Dehaan. She explains further why the role of women in farming is often overlooked in lower to middle income countries.
Farming is usually done in a very different way than a lot of other sectors, i.e. a lot of it is informal work, so based on a family. A family provides the work for the farm, and so it's not often commodified. So that often means that people have to jump in to do things in agriculture, and that's how agriculture stays alive. In contrast to a lot of other sectors where it's actually an income or a wage labor, or agriculture is not like that, especially when we talk about smallholder. Usually the wife or the woman on the farm actually does quite a lot and jumps in a lot of places and even has her own parts in agriculture. So this is one of those things that a lot of people haven't really thought about, because agriculture is one of the oldest traditions that we have in the world, because we've always had to feed ourselves. So we haven't really, you know, unpacked that very much. And so that's the research we're trying to do, is unpack that. Who provides what labor to what end in agriculture and in the smallholder systems? And I think that's where we've been able to show quite clearly that women actually provide a lot of the labor. But like I said, because it's not commodified or not, there's not a price given to that. So what we're trying to argue is that, yes, women are in agriculture. Women do provide a lot of the labor, and since they are providing a lot of the labor, let's give them the tools to do it better and more efficiently, and, you know, that they can spend time on other things too.
Part of the platform's job in accumulating gender research is to get research incorporated into policy.
There's several ways that you could see that happening, or that we do it. One is just raising awareness. I mean, just letting people know through the research. Numbers do matter. I mean, I know policymakers say, and everybody says, yeah, well, policymakers, it's also political and whatnot more. But numbers do matter, and you need to give good numbers. And so one of the things we've done a lot with gender as well as, like I say, is to highlight the role women play in agriculture. I mean, in livestock, you know, the fact that we say that 2/3 of livestock keepers are women has brought people to think, hey, women are actually more important than we thought. So having that data, I think, is very important. So that's one way we talk to policymakers. But another way, for instance, is a project that we're working on that has been quite interesting and quite important, is looking at a national level, also at global level. We've done a list on a global level, but looking at a national country level, where are some hot spots of gender inequities happening?
Nicolene has some ideas about how we could reach the hallowed future, a world without gender inequality.
I think there are two levels that we really need to work closely with. And one is at the household level, I mean, with the fathers, so that the fathers actually give the girls in the household the confidence, also the mothers, I'm not saying that, but the confidence to do what they need to do. But it's not only that level, it's not the individual that has to have the confidence, not the individual that has to have the aspiration, the vision of where they want to go with their lives. It's also actually at, you know, the president. The president also needs to make sure that they lead by example. I mean, and unfortunately we don't have many female presidents still, but they need to set up the system so that, that girls and women can, you know, be productive and you know, in the society and have everything that they need to have a vibrant life and a vibrant a community. So for me, it's, you know, the two sides. You need to make sure that the system works. And again, when I say to help women, I make the same mistake as everybody else does. We have a whole diversity of women. It's not, women are not a homogeneous group. But in a lot of things with, when we talk about women, it's a lot about systematic problems. You know, systematically that women can't access things because cultures don't expect women to actually own mobile phones. You know, in some cultures, if a woman owns mobile phone, oh, she might be too powerful. She might be able to link up with a boyfriend or whatever. So those type of things also are there. And so I think, you know, just giving a woman a smartphone or any digital tool is not going to be the only answer. We also need to understand everything around it. What are some of the other limitations around using that tool for her? I.e., yeah, she can get the information, but she still just can't get access to financial services. So like I say, there's still a lot of parts to it. It's important part, and I'm glad that there's an attention being given to it. But like I say, I think there's much more around it that also needs to be solved for it really to help women.
Thank you for joining me on the BOMA. Please leave a review or get in touch with us by our social media and have a happy International Women's Day.